Stay calm. Don't panic. You got this.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. This is Chris Roby.
This is Carly Duke.
How are you, Carly?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
I'm good. A little warm from the weekend.
You sounded a little hesitant when you said that.
Yeah. Well, I had all three kids on my own, and house is still standing.
Oh, hey, that's a big accomplishment.
Yes, it is. That's a big accomplishment. Everyone's alive, and a few more gray hairs, but I'm doing okay.
So this long Easter weekend for you was really, really long.
It was really long, but I made a new friend.
Oh, who?
In my phone, he's labeled Tony, the guy that ran out of gas.
That sounds like a great story waiting to happen.
Yeah, I was driving along, and this guy, and it was like 35 degrees outside, and a guy in a little black convertible was straight onto the side of the road, and he was literally waving people down. And so I decided to pull over for some reason, and he said, I need you to jump in my car. And if you know much about cars, if you're broken down on the side of the road, the battery's not the thing that's dead. Something else is going on. So I obliged him. I tried to jump him. It wasn't that. It's like, hey, do you have gas? He goes, yeah, I have gas. Like, did you look at your gas meter?
Are you sure you have gas?
And I pointed at it, and it's completely empty. So I had to go back to the house. And anyways, he gave me his number, and he didn't speak a lot of English, but he was really grateful. But he's been texting me.
Oh, y'all are still – so this is a real long-term friend.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I mean, he just lives one neighborhood over, and he asked me to teach his kid guitar, and I don't know that I ever will, but
– Oh.
Yeah, so.
Well, I made a friend at Starbucks.
Oh, you did?
However, I did not give him my number. Okay. He asked for it.
Okay.
So sitting at Starbucks, getting some work done, and teenage boy, probably late high school, maybe about to go into college, came up, and all I hear is, hey – I like your laptop. I was like, hey, thank you.
That was a good conversation starter, yeah.
Yeah, it was great. Uh-huh. So he pulled up a chair next to me without being invited, and we had a great conversation. And he introduced himself, and then he goes, will you be my friend? And I was like, sure. And he goes, like, can we hang out? I was like, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think my husband would appreciate me hanging out with some stranger from Starbucks. So We can be friends if he ever finds me again, but
yeah, but you'll do everything you can to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I did not give out any personal information on
right,
that one.
Right. Today, going to do something a little bit different. We'll do this a few times this season. Typically, we do an interview that's kind of based around a subject where we'll find someone that knows a lot about self-harm or drug and alcohol abuse or just teenage issues. But today what we're going to do is Carly and I, we're going to sit down and talk through how do you talk to a teenager? How do you communicate with a teenager? And we're going to really work through some material on that. We've done some research and also some stuff that we do with Teen Lifeline as well. So we're really excited about that.
Right. So speaking of that question, I'd like your opinion, Chris.
Okay.
So how do you actually get a teenager to talk to you?
How do you get a teenager to talk to you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Can I have a few guesses?
Sure.
Okay. Candy.
That might work.
Candy might work.
We do like to bribe with candy around here.
Well, maybe I'm thinking of my five-year-old. That works for him. So I assume that it has to work for teenagers too, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. You could arm wrestle.
Arm wrestling?
Yeah, just to kind of take the edge off a little bit.
I don't know if that'd work for girls. I don't know about boys. I'm not a boy.
Well, yeah, if that guy at Starbucks asked to arm wrestle you, that'd be a conversation starter.
That's true.
Yeah.
But he had that one in the bag.
Oh,
he knew
okay.
how to start that conversation.
Okay. All right. That's true. Okay. That's all I've got.
Okay, great.
Candy and arm wrestling. Yeah.
So I'm glad we did some research today for this podcast.
All right, thanks for joining us, guys.
Yeah, that's all we have. Why are we talking about this today? Do teenagers even want us to talk to them?
I think so, and I think a big part of that is just thinking back on my own teenage experience. I've always considered myself a wallflower back then, where I would talk if talked to, but I was never anyone who would just really give that information up. And that might be personality driven for me, but I also think part of being a teenager too is not knowing exactly how to interact with adults because I think a lot of times I don't know exactly what they are expecting of me. What do they want from me.
Right.
And I think back on some of the people in my life who, as a teenager, I would talk to. And the big ones, the big one I can think of is actually one of my best friend's parents. And I grew up going to their house. I mean, I would say every weekend we were out there doing something. They had this great house out in the country. But what I remember the most about their house was their kitchen table. And they had this little breakfast nook or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they always had food. And like I always say that I learned how to make a good sandwich at Carl and Landis Hoag's house. It's a really, like I make good sandwiches now because like I would just raid the refrigerator and make great sandwiches there. But I would eat and I would talk to them, and they would stay up later than they needed to as working people to listen to us. And sometimes they would interject advice and say, "Hey, here's what I think about what you should do." And sometimes they wouldn't. But I always knew that was a place that I could always have those kind of conversations.
Right.
Yeah, and I don't know about you. I mean, do you think teenagers want to be talked to or want to be heard?
I definitely think so. I think teenagers, and even thinking back to when I was that age, give off this vibe of, I don't want to talk to you and I don't want you to tell me what to do. However, I can vividly remember there were times where I was like, I need to talk to someone. It doesn't need to be someone my age.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be a parent. It needs to be some other adult, whether that's a mentor or whatever that looks like, and going and seeking that out and just having those people that were there. My parents were really intentional about putting other people in our lives, mm-hmm. who that they trusted, who they knew if I went to them that I could sit down and talk and they would give good advice. And mm-hmm. so I think as a teenager, I kind of probably took that for granted. And it wasn't until I got to college and realized, wait a second, where are those people? Where are the people that I always could count on? And I miss them now, but I don't think teenagers really even fully understand what they have maybe until that's gone.
We'd like to talk about maybe what not to do first before we
get
talk
that
about,
out of the way.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think it's easy to go into the do's, but let's start with the don'ts, like kind of the bad news first. Like here's some things that might shut down conversation a little bit. And Carly, it was a couple months ago you wrote this?
Yeah, probably a couple weeks or a couple months
ago. Yeah, not too far back. I wrote this great blog post about ways that you can kind of shut down conversations with a teenager. And what was the exact title of it?
I think how to stop teens from confiding in you.
Yeah. So how to stop a teenager from confiding in you and sharing with you and trusting you to be someone they can talk to.
Exactly.
And so Carly's going to share a little bit about that from that blog post.
Right. And I'll link this blog post. If you go to our website, you can get all the resources that we talk about today. But I wrote this blog basically out of personal experience from talking to teenagers and hearing their conversations about them saying, I don't talk to my parents anymore because one time I shared and my mom cried. Or I got grounded one time because I told my dad something. Huh. And so I hear these teenagers in our group talk about that they don't want to talk to their parents or adults in general. And sometimes they don't even trust me because of stuff that's happened with other adults. And that kind of made me mad. And so I wanted to write a blog post about, hey, stop doing these things because it's making your teenager not want to talk to you and not want to share. So there were two that I kind of wanted to cover briefly today. And there were a couple more in that blog post if you want to go read more about it. But the first one is don't tell your teenager that they're just being dramatic. Huh. I don't know if you run into that, but sometimes teens are dramatic, maybe.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. A lot of drama. And I think there's times I want to say that too.
Yes, exactly. Right. And so I'm not saying that you can't think it, but do not tell your teenager you're just being dramatic. We see this a couple times. I had a teenager that was sharing with me that they felt like they were depressed, that they needed help. They wanted to go see a therapist. And their parents were like, you're just being dramatic. Get over it. You're going to be fine.
So really minimizing
right
what they were going through.
Basically saying you don't have a problem, just get over it, and not getting their teen the help that they needed. And I think maybe part of that came from not wanting to accept that or being scared of their teen having depression. But the advice I want to give you today is always believe your child. If they're reporting abuse, if they're saying that they need help, that they're depressed, if they want to go see a counselor, always say, okay. And then maybe you leave that up to the professional if they say, okay, I don't necessarily think they're actually depressed and here's how we move on.
Mm-hmm.
But as the parent, if you minimize what they're going through and say, I think you're just being dramatic or I don't believe you, they're never going to come talk to you ever again.
So why do you think parents do that? I mean, there's obviously, you know, something driving that just, you know, I don't want to, I just don't want to deal with this. This is too complicated.
I think too complicated. I think sometimes parents have this vision of their kids and live vicariously through them, but if they put them on a pedestal of they're perfect, that happens to other kids. Other kids get sexually abused. Other kids have depression. Other mm-hmm. kids struggle with anxiety or self-harm or all these different things. And if my kid's telling me that that's what they're struggling with, then I have to realize, oh, now I've got to do something about it.
Right.
And I think maybe even some of that comes from guilt. I don't know about if a parent blames himself and it's easier to say, that's not me.
Mm-hmm. I think it could also be just as simple as fatigue.
Right.
Like, I don't have the energy to deal with this right now. And I think, you know, any good parent would never want to admit that. But sometimes it's easier to say, just rub some dirt on it. You know, I don't want to mess with this right now, instead of having to go through the real difficult steps of walking with your teenager through having to go to counseling or finding someone to help them deal with an issue, whatever that looks like. I think sometimes just addressing your own and being honest with yourself and saying, you know, as a parent, am I just beat down, tired right now? Do I need to get a nap and then we can deal with this? Or, you know, I guess I speak to that as a tired parent. I can totally see that being the case.
Exactly. So that was kind of the first one of, don't tell your teenager that they're just being dramatic, or don't just kind of gloss over what they're telling you. Sit down and talk to them and really dive in, ask good questions about what is going on so you can decide how to help them. And then the second one is, you don't be dramatic. And that's kind of the flip side, but I've heard my parents say a lot when my dad was in youth ministry, telling parents to be shockproof. And basically unpacking that, what that means is, if a child comes to you and tells you something big, you need to sit there and pretend like it's not phasing you at all. That means no crying, no yelling, no freaking out, no saying, I thought you were perfect, what happened to you? All that kind of stuff. And you can do that later. You can go into your room later and break down and say, what is happening to my baby? And I thought that all this stuff was going right. But in that moment when you're talking to your teenager, you need to be shockproof. Mm-hmm. One thing, start this when they're young. When they're little, it's easier if you start when they come to you and, I don't know, maybe your five-year-old says a cuss word and you're like, I have no idea where that comes from. Mm-hmm. Be shockproof in that and say, okay, where'd you hear that? And ask questions instead of screaming at them. Because mm-hmm. when you do that from a young age, they learn, I can't tell mom and dad anything because mm-hmm. they're going to freak out.
Mm-hmm. I would also think, too, that being shockproof helps kind of get down to the truth of the matter a little bit more. Because if me as a teenager, if I'm dealing with something as big as depression, maybe, or mm-hmm. If I'm addicted to something, or, you know, I'm just in a bad way, sometimes even in my own mind, I'm not making sense of what this really is. And so if I go to my parents and say something, or go to an adult that I trust and say something, and they react like they're not shocked, you know, and they are calm and cool, I know from their reaction that they're going to walk through it with me. And I also know that I'm a little bit more safe to explore this a little bit more.
Exactly.
So if it's the opposite, where they blow up and freak out, then that part of me shut down, where I might not be able to figure out and really make true sense of what is going on in my life. And so I think that's another gift that you can give. It's you know, helping them know you can, I'm safe in this space, and know that there might even be other adults out there like that as well.
Exactly, because if you overreact from the very beginning, how can your teen trust you to take that information and help them?
Mm-hmm.
If you can't personally handle it, how are you going to help them handle it?
Right.
And so teenagers need to know that there's a safe place where they can go and share difficulties, share struggles, share something that's heavy that's going on in their life, and their parent can sit there and take it, and they can take time. And maybe for you, if you do have a tendency to freak out, or you do have a tendency to get emotional in front of your teenager, maybe that means you listen to them and listen through it, and you say, give me 30 minutes and then let's come back and revisit this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And don't use that as an excuse to completely ignore it, but take 30 minutes, go on a walk, go sit down and be quiet, whatever that looks like for you to process that, and then go back to your teenager and say, okay, I want to have this conversation without getting emotional, without getting upset at you. So now let's have this conversation now that I've had time to process it a little bit more.
Right. Because I think everyone needs shelter in the middle of the storm. And if your teenager is going through a storm, there's chaos and they don't know which way is up, that being shockproof is that shelter. It's the kind of the one safe place where, okay, if I know this adult isn't freaking out about this, I know that there might be hope here.
Exactly. You know,
that there is some kind of a safety here. And so, but we don't see that a lot.
No, it's rare. And I think it's so sad. I hear this so many times with teenagers, and recently, probably a really extreme example, but in a group, I had a girl that the school district put me in touch with because they knew her story and what was going on, but they just wanted someone for her to talk to. And she shared with me, and the school already knew this, but that she had told her mom that she was suicidal. And her mom freaked out, started crying, called the school, called everyone she knew, and told that her daughter was suicidal and just really didn't handle it well. And in this conversation with this girl, she also shared with me that she thinks she's homosexual. And I asked, have you told your mom that? And she said, no. She goes, did you hear how she just reacted to me saying I maybe wanted to commit suicide or was having suicidal thoughts? And she said, yeah. There's no way I'm going to ever share that with my mom.
Right.
Because I couldn't trust her with stuff I had told her earlier.
Right.
And I don't think parents realize if you react badly to one thing, they're not going to share with you ever again. Mm-hmm. And there is a way to bridge that. But at the same time, that requires a conversation. And you control sometimes how you react and then if they're going to continue to talk to you about hard stuff, heavy stuff, whatever's going on in their life.
Right. So let's talk about that. Let's kind of move from the don'ts to the do's.
Perfect.
So we want to encourage you as the helper to be a good listener, and that kind of being a starting place. There's a lot to being a good listener, and part of the training that we do within our organization, we spend a few hours just kind of walking through what does it mean to be a good listener, and a lot of times it is in the way that you construct your questions is how you are a good listener. Because sometimes if you throw out closed-ended questions to your kid or construct questions in such a way that they already know what answer you're looking for, you're not going to get much out of them at all. But
give an example of that. Sorry to cut you off. Can you give an example of a closed-ended?
Do you know what you sound like when you say that?
Yeah. Because if I'm a teenager, I'm like, I don't have to give you a real answer because I know what you're looking for.
Or do you know how that makes me feel?
Yes.
Right. So things like that where okay, obviously it doesn't make you feel good, right? I mean, so it's pretty easy to read into. I mean, it really plays your cards pretty quickly on how you're feeling about things, which isn't always a bad thing, but it's also not inviting conversation. And I would also say, too, there's kind of this really bad way to start any question. And it's one word, but it's also the easiest thing we go to, and that's the word why. So, Carly, why were you late today?
Ooh, mm-hmm. I can't believe you asked that.
I know. Actually, she wasn't. It was our boss that was late today. But yeah.
But I see where you're going with that. Yeah. If you ask me why are you late, I'm automatically going on the defensive.
Right, right.
I'm automatically either going to make up an excuse or come up with something because I think you're judging me because I was late.
Right, right. And I guess my question to you is, why is why a bad question?
You asked me a why question.
Yeah, I did. I threw you off there. But how is that? How is why? It makes you defensive, but what else does it – why does it make you defensive?
Well, I think we talk about this a lot in our training. And teenagers at this age, a lot of times don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
So you can ask them, why did you make that decision? And they are literally thinking, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And they can tell you that and you can get really mad, but they really have no idea why they did that.
Mm-hmm.
And so asking why is not going to get to the root of what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want to know why.
Mm-hmm.
you really want to know what is it that's making them do that? What mm-hmm. is it that's making them feel that way? And you can ask it in different ways. It's not why, but mm-hmm. it takes some more thinking, I definitely.
Well, and I think it's, I think that was, that's really cool because I think sometimes as an adult, you don't really want to know why. Sometimes we inadvertently use why as a weapon and questioning where, you know, I'm going to make sure you understand how displeased I am with you by, you know, heaping a little extra guilt or shame onto this by using whys. And we don't, I mean, we're not always cognizant of that, I don't think, but I think that there's something to that where it can be kind of a jagged question.
Right. I think I see this even in my own marriage. And so I can definitely see how teenagers would get this too. For example, if my husband leaves a dirty cup in the sink and I ask, why did you leave that there? He's told me before, that question makes me feel like an idiot. Mm-hmm. He was like, that question is not going to be helpful. And he was like, you're not really asking why I did that because mm-hmm. you don't want to know the answer.
Right, right. And I think you talked about earlier about if you're not mentally in a place to have the conversation with your student, the student that you are helping, taking that time to where you can evaluate how you really feel about this before you go into it. Because when you really go in emotional, a lot of times those things will reveal themselves very quickly. Your biases, mm-hmm. how you're upset. But if you take even 10 minutes to, you know, collect yourself, say, hey, I need to go get a drink and we'll come back and we'll talk about this. Typically you come back knowing that you're pretty upset about this. And so you're able to construct your questions a little bit more effectively. And so if why is a bad, and by the way, this might be the hardest thing for us to ask you to do as a listener is to take why out of your questions. Just try it today. it is such a part of how we ask questions. And again, we don't always mean it in a bad way. And I don't think you'll ever completely eliminate it, but it's about what do you substitute for why? And so using beginning statements and questions with so or how or what is a much more inviting way to start a question and say, well, why'd you do that? Well, how is that? Or so tell me more about why you left the cup in the sink. Those kind of things where you're not implying that they necessarily have done anything wrong. What you're trying to do is draw out some kind of conversation and keep that conversation open and going. So why we'll tend to shut down, they'll say, I don't know. They say, well, so tell me about this or how did you do that? Or what about this?
Or what led you to that decision?
Mm-hmm. Right. Which it almost sounds a little more cumbersome to say it that way, but it might even sound that way to a student, like, why are you asking a question like that? Because we're not very good at asking questions. And so a well-worded question might sound a little foreign at first, and they might notice that. And they might notice you're making an effort to word your questions in a more effective way, and they might be willing to talk to you a little more on that.
Okay, Chris. So I hear you saying that we need to ask good questions and you've given some ways to start off those questions, but how do we know what to ask about? How do we know what to focus on and when to ask good questions to our teenagers?
Well, you just know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You just know.
So wise.
Right. But that's actually kind of the answer is that whole idea of intuition. I think as a dude, I struggle with this a little bit more than the women in my life. And I don't think a lot of guys I talk to say that. Like girls are so much better at this. And I think guys sometimes have to work at this a little bit more of just being intuitive. And maybe part of it is just not really trusting your intuition. Maybe that might be more what this is. But intuition is defined as kind of knowing something without the need for conscious reasoning. I just know this.
Like a gut feeling.
Yeah, trusting your gut. And that's really just another way of saying that's my intuition, knowing there's something going on here, but I don't know what that is. So that's pretty key about intuition is typically it's more of a there's something here that I need to be paying attention to. But you don't know what it is without asking more questions. Hmm. Now, to be able to really pay attention to your intuition – a lot of times it's about indicators. It's about what is it that's waving their hands at you in the middle of a conversation? Like, look at me, look at me, look at me. I'm waving my hands. By the way, you can't see it.
He is that right? He's I'm waving my hands. Yes. Waving his hands.
I am. Yeah, it's pretty sad. but there are basically five things that can serve as an intuition indicator, things that you should probably pay attention. One of them is, as you're talking to a teenager, it's their own discernment of the situation. So basically, what is it? How do they see this going in their lives right now? And even if it seems so off the wall and like you're like, this is not true, it's still their discernment of the situation. It's how they see their story. And so paying attention, how do they, you know, maybe their parents are going through a divorce or they're on drugs or they're going through a breakup. How do they see it? You know, what's their side of the story? Secondly is paying attention to major turning points of a story. So the parents' divorce or the big move or the first failing grade or something, you know, things where everything kind of changed at that point. And so really paying attention and saying there's something here at these turning points of the story. And so paying attention to where are those things. Strong emotions are obviously huge indicators that, okay, something's going on here. So if it's a string of expletives.
They start crying.
Just anger. Or just, being despondent, just kind of far away. And, you know, that could be a strong emotion too. Just, you know, not really much at all. Something that's maybe a little bit out of the regular and the ordinary stuff, can be, good indicators that something's going on. That one's a pretty obvious one, but something to look at. Red flags, in someone's story are basically places where the story doesn't line up. And you will find this a lot with teenagers. And if there's teenagers listening to this, we're not trying to discourage you. But a lot of times teenagers don't always, especially younger teenagers, aren't always making the connection between different parts of their story. Hmm. And so what they might say online might be completely different than what they say in real life. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they're being dishonest.
It's just an inconsistency maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
You could notice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And so – so, but those are also intuition indicators. You can say, okay, you said this here, but then there's something different here. And it's not an accusation, it's an observation. Mm-hmm. Saying there's two different things here that I'm seeing, and it's making me curious. And finally is patterns. And I'm a big fan of patterns.
Did you say fattern?
Fatterns. See, I got to start talking slower. I'm getting worked up here, Carly. I'm excited about intuition indicators.
I can tell.
Yeah. Well, I'm waving my arms around. So exactly. So patterns are really any kind of repetitive word, set of words, a story they keep going back to, even repetitive motions, actions, just anything that you notice, this keeps coming up. That's typically someone, you know, sending a smoke signal that, hey, something's here. And so as being a good listener, really trusting the intuition. And one of the cool things about these intuition indicators is that they don't necessarily tell you that there's a problem. They tell you where to ask. So any one of these things is it gives you an opportunity to ask a really good question. So if you're telling me a story about you and Josh and two parts of that story did not line up, it's really well within my rights as a good listener to say, hey, these things don't line up. Tell me more about that. Mm-hmm. I'm not calling you a liar. I just don't – maybe I didn't hear you right. And a lot of times that helps you clarify your own story a little bit. Like, oh, yeah, maybe I did say that wrong. Let me clarify that a little bit. Or if there is a strong emotion, say, hey, tell me, you know, you're obviously really upset. Tell me more about what's making you upset, what's making you cry, why are you saying those words that are obviously so strong, major turning points of the story. Any of these things give you an opportunity to ask. And I'll kind of leave off with this. There's this great quote from Tony Stolfus, who wrote this book called Leadership Coaching. And intuition really leads you to being curious, is really what this comes down to. And he talks about, and being a good listener is to follow your curiosity and not your diagnosis. Mm. And I love that idea that to be a really good listener, you're not really trying to diagnose things. You are trying to be really curious and ask good questions, follow the intuition so that the person that you're talking to, the teenager you're talking to knows, this person really cares about me. because they're obviously listening enough to know what's going on with my story. And all that is being really curious and following your intuition as you're asking those questions. So that's, I think that's something that teenagers could really use from the people who help them in their lives.
Right. They definitely need someone to listen. And I think, as you've heard us talk about several times, when you ask questions, you can maybe get in a little less trouble than if you sit there and try to diagnose them. Mm-hmm. If you try to tell your teenager, you're feeling this way, or you did that because of this. If you start diagnosing, then they're going to be on the defensive if you point out those whys. However, if you ask really good questions and you listen really well and take a moment and just say, okay, I'm going to back off of what I already think happened in the situation and listen to what they're saying, you can have a really great conversation and maybe learn a lot more about a teenager that way.
Right. So I want to break this down a little bit more with you after the break. We're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsor, Lubbock Christian University, who's been so awesome to us. And
yes, we love them.
Yeah, you're going to hear about a lot about them throughout this whole season. So real quick, check in with this this brief commercial break.
Yep, and then we'll be back.
All right.
Don't panic!
Hi, my name is Becca, and all my professors at Lubbock Christian University know it. I never realized what a difference it would make attending a smaller university. I've traveled the world, and I've had leadership opportunities you can only find at a place like LCU. I know that my experience at Lubbock Christian University is what gave me the edge to be hired right after graduation.
Believe, belong, be blue. That's Lubbock Christian University.
We want to end off our conversation today about how do you talk to your teenager with some practical stuff. And there's a lot of great things floating around the internet. We love lists, right?
Yes,
the lists are great. One of the ones that both of us have seen over the last 6-8 months that really jumped off the page to us, because we feel like it can cover really any age. But it talks a lot about after school. Mm-hmm. What are some things you can ask your student other than how was your day?
Okay. Fine.
Right. Or do you have any homework or whatever that is? You know, ways to get them to open up a little bit, questions for the drive home, or when you're, eating something after school, whatever that looks like, some different questions you can ask.
Right. So we'll link this full article on our website so you can see it from Huffington Post. There are 28 different questions that this article has. And obviously, I'm not going to sit here and just read you
that
the list.
Be a lot, yeah.
That would be a long time. How much time do you have?
Yeah.
But I did want to hit on a couple just so you could kind of see some of the questions we're talking about. So, for example, what was the coolest thing you saw today? That's a different way than asking, mm-hmm. how was your day? But what's something specific that you
saw
today?
Starting with what?
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Know why.
Mm-hmm.
Which was your easiest class or which was your hardest class?
Okay.
So asking about a specific class.
So let's say you, what would be a good follow-up question to what was your hardest class? Because the natural one would be why?
Yes.
Right?
Or what about, and if you ask that, which is your hardest class, and they say math, what could you do to make that class easier?
Mm-hmm.
What could your teacher do to help make this subject make sense to you?
Yeah.
What's something that would make it more enjoyable?
Right.
These are follow-up questions without asking, why is that your hardest class?
Well, even if you're curious, you can say, well, what about math?
Mm-hmm.
It makes it so difficult. What is it about math that, makes things hard for you? Or what about it would you rather see different, you know?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. One of these questions that I thought was really neat is which class is your favorite group of students in?
Hmm.
So kind of asking, that's a good way to ask about friends without asking who are you hanging out with at school and making it sound like you're creeping on them.
Right, right.
But out of all the classes, which group do you really like to hang out with in your classes?
Mm-hmm.
Or what part of the day do you look forward to?
Hmm.
So these are some good ways to ask questions about your student's day. And they're questions that aren't just yes or no or fine answers that you're going to get. Hopefully they're questions that you can ask follow-up questions to, and they're specific enough to where they can really dive in and give you an answer, and they can think of an answer really quickly.
Right. I think these are good starter questions that will hopefully make you feel more bold to ask even deeper questions.
Right.
You know, if they answer these, well, maybe I can dig a little deeper and say, where did you struggle today?
Mm.
Or, you know, what was one good thing you did today? I know we do that with our kid a lot, is sometimes it's easy to focus on the negative, but like, what did you do good today? You know, right. How did you help? And, or one person that you saw needed help, what happened there? Absolutely.
Exactly. And I would definitely say, don't take this list and ask them 28 questions in one sitting. Mm-hmm. Maybe pick one or two and say, I'm going to ask them these today. Mm-hmm. And tomorrow pick another one. So you don't want to overwhelm them by any means. But these are some great, just practical questions that you can ask that will be up on our site that you can look at. But moving on from that, Chris, when do you talk to your student?
That's something we've talked about lately is, you know, sometimes it is the when that defines the quality of conversation you're going to have. And I think a lot back to my, and I would say 37-year-old Chris is pretty similar to 17-year-old Chris, that I don't like to talk in the morning. And I don't like
not
to
a
have,
morning person.
No, I'm not. And, you know, I thought that I would grow out of that and become my father who loves to, you know, loves the crack of dawn and is up singing and dancing and all that. But he's not, he doesn't dance, but pretty excited about the first of the day. I just don't function that way. But, that was when growing up, that's when my mom wanted to talk was early in the morning and I had nothing, you know, I was just grumpy. But the time of day that I was really ready to talk was 10 or 11 o'clock at night when I was coming back in. But that's when my parents were already in bed or asleep. So my mom told me, you know, when I was an adult, she said, you know, she said, I would stay up later than I really wanted to just so we could talk a little bit because I knew that's when you would want to talk. And even though she was ready to go to bed and already fallen asleep, pretty much that's when she would stay up to actually have conversations. She knew that's when I would talk. So I think that's an important thing to think about as a parent or even someone who works with a student is being able to identify when are they going to talk? When are they the most ready to open up? If nothing else you're hearing us say today, we want to encourage you, if you are struggling to communicate with your student, the biggest thing you can hear today is not to give up and to continue to try even if you failed over and over and over again. Those lines of communication eventually will open up. And it might surprise you how they will. It might be something that a crisis that you come together on, or it might just be you find the right questions, they're ready to talk. But they're going to notice if you've given up and you throw your hands up and say, there's nothing I can do here. But if you continue to try and go back into battle every day for the heart of your student, eventually they will open up.
The Don't Panic podcast is produced by Teen Lifeline. Your hosts are Chris Roby and Carly Duke with special support from Ricky Lewis. The music you heard today comes from Under the Chandeliers. You can find them on SoundCloud or Spotify. If you want to check out today's notes and resources, visit our website, don'tpanicpodcast.org. Or you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, at Don't Panic Talk. Thanks for listening. And remember, don't panic. You've got this.
Do not panic.